This is the Orange Podcast, conversations with Orange City Council for the local community.
Thanks for joining us on the Orange Podcast and our summer series programs, bringing you some of the best interviews of the year while our podcast crew takes a break over the holidays. And as our year came to an end, there was a major milestone for the long-running plans to build a new conservatorium and planetarium when the Regional Planning Panel gave its planning approval. We're still looking for some of the funding components before that project can start, but there was a lot of excitement this year when the DA was finally lodged.
Oh, look, I think 98% of them will be. There'll be a couple of percent that say we should be spending our money on something else and our rates are too high and all that usual thing. But we went through that over the years when we built the council chambers. A council was thrown out over that. When we built the theatre, when we built the museum. Whenever you build public facilities such as these, a certain amount of the people are against it and they say it should be better roads or better health services or whatever. But once it's in, it's fully supported by the people. Just like our theatre has been, our museum has been, the conservatorium and the uniqueness of having a planetarium as well, I think it will not only be supported by the general population, it will add to our tourism attractions where people will come and make a special visit just to see the conservatorium and also the planetarium.
Yeah, fantastic. And Russell, I guess this project's been on the drawing board for a while now, but I guess as we're starting to come out of COVID, the government's throwing a little bit more money around trying to help communities get back on track. But I guess, do you think this is the right time that we're asking for that little bit extra to get the project fully complete?
Well, absolutely, Ellie. We've got the full support of the federal government where they've put in $10 million. And that's not going to sit in the drawer forever. They'll want it drawn on eventually. Council has committed up to $5 million, partly through the sale of the site where the present conservatorium is, and also some money that's been committed by the council itself. We're just looking for a top-up of $4 or $5 million from the state government. And whilst the state government's promoting, they're going to put some money into regional areas to get the community going, get jobs generated through the post-COVID period. We think it's an ideal time, and we hope that this will just urge the government to bring forward their commitment of that $4 or $5 million so we can proceed and start the project this year.
Yeah, that's right, which is what we all want. And as you were saying earlier, Russell, we touched on the fact that, you know, when there's anything, you know, a major development being built, sometimes obviously it upsets a few people in town, but do you think overall this will sort of transform this main precinct here in the middle of town?
Well, Ellie, I think it'll just absolutely finish it off. You've got the council chamber, the theatre, the museum, the art gallery, the extensions are going on to the art gallery very shortly. This is just a little bit of no man's land at what seems to be at the back of the precinct at the moment, but this will finish it right off. There'll still be room alongside for the farmers market, so facing Peasley Street, so that's one concern that some people have.
And Russell, earlier you touched on as well that, you know, some obviously will say that this money should be going to roads or footpaths or wherever it may be, but I guess why is it important that we keep moving forward with developments such as this rather than injecting it into roads and footpaths?
Well, for one thing, Ellie, whilst we've got a conservatorium at the moment, and there's people that could nearly proudly say, I've never been to the conservatorium, I've never been to the theatre. There are people out there that, you know, proudly say those sorts of things, but the conservatorium at the moment is running out of room. The building is starting to fall apart. It's served its purpose. It has been adapted over the years from what it was previously. But we're having trouble with water leaks and general maintenance issues, and we don't want to spend a lot of money on that building at the moment because we know we're going to move within a very, very short time. We're running out of room as far as students. We've got over 1,100 students up there at the moment and 30, 40 full-time, part-time teachers. It's gone past its use-by date. We're squeezing students into rooms that are not really suitable, they're not soundproofed and things like that. So if we are to continue to attract new people into town, and one of those attractions that we do have a conservatorium, it's a little bit embarrassing at times to take them up to the present building. Whilst it's doing a great job, it's time to move on, build a new conservatorium that we'll all be very proud of.
It's been great this week to see some coverage of the lodging of the DA for our new conservatorium. It's a project that's been in the pipeline for a long while. As well as the conservatorium, there's been long-term plans for a planetarium in Orange. And we're here right in the middle of where the planetarium dome will be built, with a man who's been pushing it for a long while, Rod Somerville. Rod, pleased to get to this point?
Definitely, very much so. It's been well and truly over a decade since we first had the idea, and trying to push it with everyone and that we could, sort of around town and with council. So definitely very happy to be at this stage.
The longer you leave it, the better the technology gets. The thing you were proposing to build 10 years ago is probably vastly different to what we're about to build now.
Oh, definitely. It's one of the things that we've actually had numerous discussions with planetarium suppliers and so on, and they've all sort of mentioned that because it has taken so long, that the technology has advanced so far. I mean, we're now up to the point where we have available things like LED domes that can have 8K resolution and more.
As well as looking at the stars, this is an educational facility, isn't it, that will be able to be used by a range of people who need to see high-quality projections?
Oh, definitely. In the beginning, planetariums were purely to display stars, and they'd have slide projectors that would show images of planets and things like that. But these days, with digital technology, we can show anything. I mean, one of the things we've always talked about is to, for instance, have a virtual trip down Cadia, down the mine. So, you know, sort of film sort of on top of a truck as they go underground, and to be able to display that in the dome.
I'm guessing we've got lots of medical specialists in Orange. There'd be all sorts of ways of teaching surgeons by having a visual tour of the human body.
Definitely. You know, apart from the sort of, as I say, the mine experience and astronomical experiences, then there's virtually sort of unlimited number of any scientific area that you can think of that can be displayed inside the dome.
Back to astronomy, the region is really well set up in terms of Australian terms, with the radio telescope at Parkes and the Siding Springs telescope at the Coonabarabran. Does this sort of educational, is this a foot in the door to people coming to the region to see that?
Definitely. You know, we do have a very rich astronomical history here in the Central West, and there are people that sort of do the tourist trail and sort of visit all these astronomical sites. But unfortunately, sort of for them, in a lot of cases, they either bypass Orange or only stay a night because they're on their way to Parkes or Coonabarabran, whereas having the planetarium, and as I say, a world-class planetarium, there's really only four others in Australia that would be equivalent, it allows them, or sort of gives them the opportunity to actually stop here in Orange and spend more than just a passing day, to spend a couple of days. And then, of course, once we have them stopping, then they can experience all the other wonderful things that we have here in the town.
So we're here on the site of a future conservatorium, about 50 metres from March Street, just back from Peasley Street. We're with Donna Riles from the Orange Conservatorium. Donna, we'll be almost in the middle of if we were back here in a few years' time, we'd be almost in the middle of a 250-seat auditorium. What do you think of that?
We would. A purpose-built music auditorium. Nothing like it, I think, in regional Australia. I think Orange...
Why will it be better than other concert halls that you've visited lately?
Because it's being designed to those standards. So it's something that is going to be a real boon for regional Australia, not just New South Wales, but to have something of this... degree of design and capability, technology, acoustically carefully designed and built, it's going to be amazing.
A top flight musician, if they're thinking about where to arrange a tour in Australia, would they really be thinking about the quality of concert facilities?
Absolutely. I think they're going to put Orange at the top of the list. ahead of some of the other recital halls around the country, but alongside, I should say, the Melbourne Recital Hall or the Sydney Opera House, the Sydney Recital Centre. You know, it's going to be up there with that standard. So it's just a delightful thing that Orange City Council has worked over a number of years to consider doing, and we're to this point today of actually lodging a DA. And there's a lot of excited people around the community. The conservatorium itself reaches to people from all ages, from 12 months old right through to 90 years, engaged in all sorts of community music making programs, and singing and playing, and just enjoying the wonderful thing that music brings into people's lives.
The state government has always got to make some tough financial decisions. They want jobs, they want economic impact. Does your organisation, the Conservatorium, employ lots of people?
We do. And look, if there was something that we could say to New South Wales government, we're helping you achieve your targets. Premier, we're helping you achieve your targets for audiences, increasing audiences in regional and rural New South Wales. And we're also, on our books at the moment, we have 42 people on the payroll. So, there's a lot of employment associated day-to-day with the Conservatorium, but also the engagement of touring artists and, of course, the whole pyramid of people that are involved in performances.
Another project this year was plans to build a network of bike trails on Mount Canobbles. The first step was some environmental research to find out if there was enough space on the mountain for that to happen. We caught up with environmental scientist Emily Cottrell to find out more.
We are just starting the process of doing the preliminary environmental constraints process. So what that entails is going up and taking, the balance, the measure of the mountain, and seeing what is up there in terms of flora and fauna. So we spent 3 days, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and a couple of nights looking at the trees and plants and orchids and things, and following the existing trails, to get a bit of a gauge of what's already up there.
Is that a good summary that you're looking into? Is it possible to build a track up there?
Look, we don't know yet. We're planning 4 discrete investigation periods as a starting point. So this was the first one for myself and our senior ecologist to go up and have a look. And what we found was some pretty beautiful and special places, but also an existing trail network that may lend itself to assisting with development of a mountain bike trail to minimise, additional impacts, if that makes sense.
How do you go about that process? You're trying to work out what are the sensitive areas. What have you found so far that suggests that there are some interesting and beautiful places up there?
Well, in almost every area we went, we did find some orchids, a little donkey orchids, Dieris species. We're in the process of identifying which ones they were. We also found, obviously, large patches of that, the Canobbles Mountain Gum, which is a beautiful sight to see, and also some quite fire-affected areas that are recovering. So it's been a couple of hard years for the mountain, and those areas are regenerating in different ways. We also did a little bit of night work, some nocturnal surveys, and we happened to see a tawny frog mouth, which is always interesting. They're funny little guys. And a sugar glider, and no response to our koala calls, but we did hear some owls. So, there's lots of stuff up there. And we've also set up some passive recording, so bat recorders, and they're called anabats, and they sit there and record the frequency of calls from a variety of bats, and that can help us determine if threatened species of bats are living up there.
So you've left a recorder up on the mountain. It'll record the noise that bats make, and that'll help you work out species and how many?
That's right. Well, probably not how many species, yes. And then those frequencies are analysed by specially developed software programs. And, they give you a rating of, they definitely found this species down to predicted. So, and then it's a case of us doing the hard yards and looking for habitat. So hollows in trees, rock crevices, access to water and other, foraging sites for the bats.
How about photographs? Will we see any images of furry creatures in the coming months?
Yeah, you should do. We got a couple of, a lot of photos of the beautiful flora. maybe a dodgy one or two at night, but it is hard to take photos in the dark.
So that was a preliminary visit. There's a lot more work on site to go before you're anywhere near to working out how much space there might be for a trail.
That's right. So this this particular visit we based off the original concept design, and just to look at the areas that they considered would be, you know, important for creating tracks going up the hills and where there were duplicates and things like that. And the next visit will probably focus more on the next iteration of that design so that we can start to hone down and then eventually get to an answer of whether there is a way to have a track up there and not cause a significant impact to the environment.
I'm guessing some of this work will be original research. You might find out some new things that people haven't found before. But would you also like to tap into other findings that other community groups and other findings have had over the years? Would you like to hear from some of them in the coming weeks?
Yes, please. We actually would love to invite anyone who has knowledge of the mountain and its unique flora and fauna to get in touch. And we'd be more than happy to hear your concerns or your areas of interest, because we want to protect those as well, as does council. That was actually made very clear to us from the very beginning, was that if there are items up there that can't be avoided, the tracks won't go through there. So we're very much keen to get that information from local field nats or other interested parties so that we can make sure the process is comprehensive.
And some of those groups will have made many visits to the tracks over the years, walking trails. They know where the special places are. It's really important that this be a genuine community effort to track those down.
I think it will help because the mountain is huge and diverse. And while we'll be doing our best to, you know, formally catalogue as much as we can through the process, we certainly won't be able to get into every crevice, you know. So it is really important to us that that information be more than welcome.
What's the best way for someone to get in touch with the Environmental Factor?
Oh, well, they can follow the formal process of contacting council, or they can jump on our website and get a contact form from there. We're www.envirofact.com.au. But also happy for them to send in formal, you know, letters to council, however they like, a phone call, all welcome.
And thanks for joining us on the Orange Podcast Summer Series. Tune in next week for more of our Best Of series. And remember to subscribe where you get your podcasts. Simply search for the Orange Podcast. From Alan Reader, bye for now.